Karina Gilbert will lead off. She's a clinical psychologist and an investigator at the VA Boston Healthcare System and assistant professor of psychiatry at the Boston University School of Medicine. She has extensive experience in sleep disorders, and she's an active provider of cognitive behavioral treatment care. Yelena Bodognava has doctorates in behavioral neurosciences and clinical neuropsychiatry. She's a principal investigator at the Boston VA Healthcare System and also assistant professor of psychiatry at Boston University School of Medicine. Her current research focuses upon mechanisms of cognitive improvement and recovery, particularly in blast traumatic brain injury. And with that, we welcome Karina.
Thank you. So I'm going to start the presentation, and then Yelena will take over about halfway through as I have to step out.
Great. Karina, you should have that pop-up now to share your screen.
Can you see it?
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, welcome, everyone. So in this session, we will review common sleep problems and discuss how they affect everyday functioning and outcome in veterans with TBI and PTSD. And we'll also discuss assessment instruments and current treatment options in veterans with TBI and PTSD, and also talk about some novel treatments for sleep in these conditions. So we, the presenters, we have nothing to disclose. And this program is supported by the Department of by the VA and by NIH. And we'd also like to acknowledge the members of our research team who work on this project. So this seminar will provide an overview of the quality of sleep in returning veterans with TBI and PTSD. We'll discuss how sleep disturbance affects everyday functioning and outcome in veterans with TBI and PTSD. We'll describe measurement tools for sleep assessment and treatment outcome monitoring. And we'll also review current treatment options for sleep in TBI and PTSD.
Karina, I'm sorry to interrupt. Can I get you to increase the volume on your phone a little bit more?
I think it's at its max.
Okay. Maybe just speak up a little
bit. I was
going
to try taking it off. I mean, is this better? It's just off.
Oh, that's much better.
I just need to readjust myself.
No problem. You get settled, and I'll go ahead and run this poll question.
Okay, great.
Okay, so ladies and gentlemen, you are going to have a poll question pop up on your screen momentarily. Please take just a second to fill that out. So we're trying to get a handle on what your role or roles are in the VA, so you can select all that apply. So the answer options are VA researcher, clinician, nurse, trainee, or other. And if you are selecting other, you can feel free to write in your exact job title using the question section of the GoToWebinar dashboard. Just click the plus sign next to word questions and write it in there. So it looks like we have a couple research administrators also joining us, policymakers, management, and also during the feedback survey at the end of the session, there'll be a more extensive list of roles, so you can also possibly find yours there. And it looks like we also have a peer support specialist, so thank you to those of you that wrote in. And at this time, I'm going to go ahead and close the poll. We have over 80% response rate, so that's great. So I'm going to share those results now. So it looks like we have about a quarter of our audience, 23% of our respondents are researchers, 38% are clinicians, 13 nurse, 12 trainee, and a quarter of our respondents also replied as other. So again, people were able to select more than one option. So thank you very much to those of you that responded. And Karina, I'm going to turn it back over to you now.
Okay. And I need to do the clicking again.
Yeah, one more time, please.
Sure.
Perfect. Okay. All right, so this first section, we're just going to talk about the common sleep problems in veterans with TBI and PTSD, and we'll start with TBI. So sleep problems are common in individuals with TBI, including those with mild TBI. What we know is that both sleep quality, which would be sort of the self-reported trouble sleeping, and quantity, the actual duration of the sleep, are affected. And these have been found to be significantly associated with mental health symptoms, so depression, anxiety, irritability, and so forth. Overall, about 25 to 81% of post-acute TBI patients experience prolonged or permanent sleep problems, regardless of localization, severity, or time since the TBI. And not only is the prevalence of sleep problems in TBI patients significantly higher than in the general population, these sleep problems are chronic and have been shown to persist at 6 months and up to 5 years after injury. So in terms of prevalence of sleep problems, sleep disturbances in TBI, a recent meta-analysis using data from 21 different studies with an N of 1706 examined 21 years of TBI and sleep literature and reported that in studies that used objective sleep measures in conjunction with formal diagnostic criteria, and by objective sleep measures meaning sleep studies, with formal diagnostic criteria, the prevalence of sleep disturbances was about 53%. And compared to the prevalence report in the general population, the TBI group was found to be significantly more likely to experience sleep disturbances in general, and more than 12 times more likely to have diagnosed sleep disorders. And a different study, which was a survey by the Armed Forces Health Surveillance System, found that sleep disorders were among the most common sequelae of TBI in active duty armed forces, armed forces service members between the years of 2000 and 2012. And then another study recently found that in a sample of 114 returning veterans, veterans from the recent OEF-OIF combat arenas with blast-induced mild traumatic brain injury, 77% of them reported subjective sleep difficulties. Sorry, it's not.
Okay. You may need to click onto the kind of...
Oh, I got it.
There we
okay.
go.
Yeah. So in terms of what kinds of sleep problems are found in TBI, we think about sleep problems as sort of sleep and wake disturbance. So individuals with TBI have complain of both daytime sleepiness as well as nighttime sleep disturbance. Other common post-traumatic sleep-wake disturbances include poor nocturnal sleep quality, hypersomnia, excessive daytime sleepiness, impaired daytime vigilance, and circadian rhythm phase shifts. We know that particularly in more severe TBI, the daytime wake disturbances are more common. And objective studies, sleep studies have shown that patients with TBI exhibit reduced sleep efficiency, increased wakefulness after sleep onset, increased sleep onset latency, and changes in their sleep architecture. And then they also report more frequent insomnia. And even despite these relatively high numbers of sleep problems and the different variety of sleep problems, sleep is pretty understudied in the TBI population,
and there are very few treatments and rehabilitation protocols that target sleep and TBI. This is just a couple of more, just a sort of repeat what I already said about the different types of sleep problems that are found in TBI, such as their sleep is less efficient, they wake up more frequently, it takes them longer to fall asleep, and so that's increased onset latency, and then there's also been changes in their sleep architecture that have been found. So with, especially with the current returning veterans, what we know is that it's not the, there are multiple complicating factors that need to be considered when we're looking at treatment in these veterans with TBI. So so this is just a slide that kind of demonstrates that. So there's obviously, you know, deployment, and during a deployment there might be a blast exposure injury, which could result in both TBI and these could lead to sleep. Here, sleep could also be moved up to the deployment, under the deployment box, because we know that being deployed or being in a combat zone likely impacts sleep, so a lot of veterans come back with their sleep shifted, having not slept regular sleep hours because of the deployment, and then that sort of perpetuates the problem, and what we found is that, what studies have found is that sleep can actually, poor sleep can increase the incidence of PTSD and other mental health issues following deployment. We'll talk a little bit about that later. So now we'll talk a little bit about sleep and PTSD, and obviously we know that sleep is one of the core features of PTSD, and that approximately 70% of patients with PTSD have co-occurring sleep problems. PTSD is associated with reduced sleep efficiency, increased sleep latency, increased sleep fragmentation, and greater night-to-night variability in sleep. So basically just, you know, difficulties falling asleep, difficulty staying asleep, and really pretty disrupted sleep overall. So as I mentioned earlier, what recent studies have shown is that sleep problems or poor sleep can actually be a risk factor for the development and maintenance of PTSD. So recent research suggests that sleep can be a risk factor for developing PTSD following exposure to trauma. A recent longitudinal investigation of sleep and trauma-related distress found that initial sleep problems predicted increased PTSD and depression at 6-month follow-up, whereas initial PTSD and depression did not necessarily predict increased sleep problems. And then a longer follow-up study similarly found that pre-deployment sleep complaints uniquely predicted PTSD and depression up to 2 years after deployment, even after controlling for baseline psychiatric symptoms and negative emotionality characteristics. And these findings suggest that pre-trauma sleep disturbance predicts later development of PTSD following exposure to trauma, even after controlling for pre-existing psychopathology. And a recent study found that also sleep disturbance can mediate the effect of mild TBI on the development of PTSD and depression, and that it could be an early indicator of risk for depression and PTSD in OEF, OIF, OND veterans who were exposed to a blast injury. So this is a slide that just demonstrates sort of the overlap between what we call here post-concussive syndrome, so basically the symptoms that we find following a mild TBI or a concussion, and that there is quite a bit of overlap between these with PTSD, and then there just it shows the that there are also in post-concussive syndrome, there are also some additional sleep problems, or in TBI, there's some additional sleep problems such as hypersomnia, sleep misconceptions, meaning believing that your sleep is worse than it then is shown objectively, and also circadian disorders. So, of course, you know, we see a lot of veterans who have a history of both mild TBI due to blast exposure and are diagnosed. Sorry.
Karina, did we lose you on the call? Hold on 1 second, attendees. I will see what we can figure out. Okay. It looks like Karina's having some difficulties with her audio, so I'm going to go ahead and work with her on this. Yelena, I hate to put you on the spot, but would you be able to help walk through some of this while I troubleshoot with Karina?
Absolutely, not at all. So I will start with the slides, I guess. Will I get the command from the slideshow?
Yes, let me turn this over to you now.
Can I talk over this slide in particular?
You can go ahead and open it up onto the slide that you... you can open it up on that same slide and just go from there. Yep, no problem. Thanks for your patience, everybody. Should have the pop-up behind your slides to share your screen now. Excellent. Great, thank you so much.
Hello, everybody. I'm Yelena Bogdanova. I'll continue. So as Karina discussed already, few studies have compared individuals with co-occurring PTSD and TBI with those with TBI or PTSD only. And as we highlighted some of the studies, I wanted to make sure that we'll bring the main point that it would be important to consider for everybody, that early identification and treatment of sleep disturbance may potentially help and improve development and improve the outcome on mental health disorders. So we already know that sleep affects recovery and functional status in veterans with TBI, and specifically we know, and now reading the literature once again, we have plenty of evidence that sleep problems in patients with TBI specifically exacerbate symptoms of TBI, increased pain, cognitive deficits, fatigue. There is seen an increase in neuropsychiatric symptoms, depression, anxiety, and apathy. And there is evidence that sleep problems impair cognitive functioning, memory and working memory in particular, as well as treatment outcome and adherence to treatment. We in our review of literature, we've seen reports from clinicians that we're discussing difficulty of treating people with PTSD in the environment specifically set for, say, behavioral treatments for cognitive dysfunction, such in a group setting, and vice versa. It seems that the deficits that people are having preclude their best and their optimal participation in treatment. Specifically, say it's difficult for veterans with PTSD symptoms to participate in group treatment. And similarly, it's difficult for patients with TBI to follow up the behavioral treatment for PTSD. And they need to rely on the executive function and attention and learning, which are impaired, very often impaired in TBI. Discuss impact of sleep on cognition in traumatic brain injury. So what is known as of today? We know that sleep problems affect recovery and functional status in veterans with TBI. We know that cognitive deficits are very often a major complaint post-TBI. Specifically attention, concentration, and executive dysfunction. However, a few studies have examined the association between poor sleep following TBI and cognition. So there is, however, evidence that these deficits may be exacerbated by poor sleep. Specifically, work of Bloomfield and colleagues examined whether sleep difficulties exacerbate deficits in sustained attention. Following, in their case, it was mild to severe TBI. What they found is that when they divide TBI participants into good sleepers and poor sleepers, and in this study they based the division on both subjective self-report and objective measures, they use actigraphy, I believe. And when they look at these results, it was evident that poor sleepers with TBI performed significantly worse on measures of sustained attention. Another study evaluated sleep quality and cognitive function in veterans with blast-induced mild TBI. It was N of 38 in this study. And what they found is that poor sleep quality based on self-report was associated with lower cognitive scores. Those were composite Z scores for memory and working memory. So we have evidence that sleep problems affect cognitive function in PTSD. But once again, few studies have examined specific components of cognitive difficulties, including attention, executive function, and learning with respect to poor sleep. One recent study by Brownlow, Brown, and Merman, 2013, demonstrated the relationship between sustained attention, verbal memory, and objectively measured sleep in PTSD. Interestingly, a full night sleep, what they evaluated, 7 hours or greater, mitigated attention errors in PTSD. So sleep problems in TBI and sleep problems with PTSD, we know about that, but what to do with people who have dual diagnosis, who have both? Well, for those who, clinicians working with this group of veterans, you know, it is very difficult for them. We know that a large proportion of veterans coming from the recent combat arenas present with both PTSD and mild TBI. And we also know that about 40% of dual diagnosis veterans report severe sleep disturbances as well as cognitive problems. So clearly the examination of the relation between the cognitive difficulties and sleep problems is particularly important. One study by Clark and colleagues examined the relationship between sleep, PTSD symptom severity, daily cognition, and quality of life in the returning veterans with blast exposure and current cognitive complaints. What they found is that veterans with PTSD had worse sleep on both subjective and objective measures of sleep quality. And poor sleep was related to worse self-reported daily cognition, low level of community integration, and reduced satisfaction with quality of life. So we, Karina briefly touched on that, but there is evidence that poor sleep independently predicts development of depression and PTSD, changes in post-deployment depression and PTSD symptoms, suicide risk in clinical and non-clinical populations, and post-deployment community integration. Furthermore, there is some evidence that poor sleep likely impacts the efficacy of evidence-based psychotherapy for treatment of PTSD. Just to give you more information, veterans with sleep difficulties report lower quality of life, more severe fatigue, pain, PTSD, and depressive symptoms compared to those without sleep difficulties. A recent study found that poor sleep quality was associated with PTSD, panic disorder, depression, suicidal ideation, and risky drinking behavior in the Iraq-Afghanistan veterans. Sleep disturbances were more related to low satisfaction with life and post-deployment community reintegration than any other symptoms in PTSD. Just checking in with Molly. I can go on, right?
Yes, please do. I spoke with Karina, and she apologizes for dropping off, but she said you can take it away.
Sorry, I'm recovering from cold. In this section, I will highlight, excuse me, the some of the latest developments we found in our review literature using objective measures of sleep. And type your meeting tell you more about the novel treatment options, emerging rather treatment options for treatment. So in our studies, actually, we're using actigraphy, and the reason we started using it because there was an apparent need. We're working with veterans with blast exposure, mild TBI, and about 80% of those folks also have diagnosis of PTSD. So the sleep is very disrupted, and we just had to use actigraphy to collect objective measure, collect data, objective data using this tool I'm just about to tell you. So actigraphy is objective measure of sleep quality. It is used in previous studies that kind of determined our first choice. I'm pretty sure there are more actigraphic monitoring devices right now, but for the purpose of continuity, we continue to use the same device in all our studies. What we found is that it is a reliable indicator of global sleep parameters that are used in research. And most importantly, the ambulatory nature of actigraphic monitoring, it allows for more ecologically valid data collection and prolonged sleep recording, typically 7 days as compared to polysomnography, which is usually 1 or 2 nights. So actigraph is a wrist-worn activity monitor with a built-in accelerometer, and it allows unrestrained registration of activity in natural surroundings. We know that polysomnography is the gold standard for objective sleep measure, but it is also costly. It may not be the most practical and ecological method to examine sleep, specifically in our population. We know, and recent evidence suggests, that greater intra and inter-individual variability of sleep in military-related PTSD relative to the primary insomnia patient and healthy control. And it's been suggested that many patients with PTSD may actually sleep better in the lab because they may feel safer and more protected under the observation of the research staff. But we believe, with our own experience and everything we found in the literature, that actigraphy can be a useful and practical tool for both sleep evaluation and treatment monitoring. I'll give you an example of how the data output looks. So you could see, do you see me moving this on the screen?
Yes, we do see your mouse. Mm-hmm. We do not, however, see that control panel.
Oh,
so
okay.
You can minimize that, and we won't see it.
Okay, very good. So, coming back to the previous slide, here you can see the output. So on your right, you see the monitoring device, ActiveWatch. It is very easy to use, very light and comfortable to wear. It is water-resistant and practically indestructible. So in our studies, as I said, we use it to evaluate sleep pre- and post-treatment and the follow-up. So we ask participants to wear it for 1 week. They don't need to take it off, so, and it's kind of really comfortable. It feels lighter than a watch. And later, the actigraphy software processes the data, calculates the sleep parameters I'm about to tell you, and that's what you will see. It is an example of two participants. One under regular sleep pattern, I should qualify it as almost regular sleep pattern. You can clearly see the blue on your screen if you have it in color, the time periods of sleep. And dysregulated sleep, it may seem unreal, but that's how our majority of our people's data looks. So, I will tell you a little bit about the measures. For those of you who do evaluation, you probably use standardized questionnaires to collect the information. So actigraphic monitoring provides both sleep quality and sleep quantity measures. So as you can see, you can get total sleep time, wake after sleep onset, sleep efficiency, which is an important parameter, and fragmentation index. I can tell you a little bit more and show actually an example of veterans that Carpetol reported that in the sample of 39 veterans with blast exposure, they use subjective and objective sleep quality measures. PSQI, this is the standardized Pittsburgh scale for sleep evaluation. It's Pittsburgh Sleep Quality Index scale. what they found, that the greater self-report sleep disturbance and reduced sleep efficiency in veterans with PTSD as compared to non-PTSD group. Here is another graphic representation of the relationship between PTSD and sleep efficiency. As you can see, the PTSD symptom severity negatively correlated with actigraphy sleep efficiency. Well, as we can see, it is important to evaluate the quality of sleep as it may provide clinically important information. And as I mentioned, we believe that actigraphy may be useful for both sleep evaluation and treatment monitoring. So it is clear that we need to treat sleep. So still, why is it so important for our population? Well, of course, we know that sleep is among the primary symptoms, but we also learned that it's one of the mediating factors affecting the level of severity and treatment outcome in both conditions. We also learned that poor sleep remains at clinical levels even after the resolution of multi-BI or PTSD. We know that sleep is critical for restorative processes and neural repair, and that it is important for cognitive, psychosocial, and physical functioning. However, there are few treatments and rehabilitation protocols that target sleep as primary symptoms. It is also known fact that traditional treatment of sleep disorders relied on pharmacology. However, we looked again, and the pharmacologic treatment for sleep is not generally recommended in TBI. Why? Because a pharmacologic agent may negatively impact neural recovery following TBI, and side effects may further impair cognition and daytime alertness. However, there is not much evidence-based treatment, but recently they were developed non-pharmacologic interventions. They have high potential for treating sleep in TBI and TBI-PTSD combination, like cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia, web-based computerized interventions, and neuromodulation techniques such as light-emitting diodes or LED and transcranial magnetic stimulation, specifically repetitive transcranial magnetic stimulation, RTMS. We looked at the current guidelines that are developed by the Standards of Practice Committee of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. They recommend using psychosocial and behavioral interventions for the treatment of chronic primary insomnia and secondary insomnia. There were no guidelines specific to treatment of sleep disorders following mild TBI. And as far as we understand, recommendations from sleep disorders have been adopted from current practice guidelines outside of the TBI field. In our review of the literature, we found that the Psychopharmacology Algorithm Project at the Harvard Alshul Program actually has proposed treatment guidelines outlining that sleep evaluation and treatment should be the first step in assessing and treating PTSD, and the authors are Bayo and Toll at 2011. I don't think I have it on my slide. Yes, so what are the potential solutions yet to be found? Potentially, and it's kind of trickling down in the literature and suggested that one of the potential solutions would be to provide a combination, an integrated treatment program to address these multiple issues in veterans with TBI, PTSD, and sleep disorders. So let me tell you about one promising non-pharmacologic option. It's cognitive behavioral treatment for insomnia. It is a psychotherapeutic treatment, and based on literature review, it's 4 to 8 sessions that has successfully treated insomnia in non-TBI population, except one study. This program utilizes stimulus control, sleep restriction, and cognitive restructuring in order to alter and improve sleep behaviors and thoughts related to poor sleep. In an 8-session study that involved 11 TBI patients, sleep efficiency increased by an average of 13.7% from baseline to 3 months follow-up. And reductions in sleep disturbance were associated with decreased fatigue. However, the cognitive restructuring component of CBTI may be challenging for a person with cognitive, such as attention, executive function, or self-monitoring deficits, and those are frequently associated with TBI. Clearly, more work is required in this area, but for people who may be at liberty to consider using this treatment in combination of or in conjunction with other treatments, please, there is some evidence that it is helpful for people with these conditions. One of the critical elements and one of the key issues, actually, to consider in treating veterans is treatment accessibility. So providing treatment to patients in rural locations actually may be possible utilizing web-based and telehealth treatment paradigms. So we checked for evidence. So though limited, there is emerging evidence that web-based CBT with automated support may be effective in improving the sleep and associated daytime functioning in adults with insomnia. Telehealth protocols specifically targeted sleep difficulties in veterans with multiple comorbidities are yet to be developed and implemented. There were 3 recent research reports that demonstrated that up to 8 weekly sessions of telephone-delivered CBT of 5 weeks of computerized program or six weeks of unsupported internet-delivered self-help treatment can improve sleep in adults with chronic insomnia. Well, it is important to evaluate whether these protocols can be utilized in treating active duty military personnel and veterans. For example, in one recent study, they reported efficacy of behavioral intervention for insomnia in veterans that involved 1 in-person and 3 follow-up telephone sessions, as well as electronic components. And the authors report large effect sizes for pre- and post-treatment decrease in insomnia. So there is promise in that. Well, there are more challenges on this topic than many others that we reviewed recently, but as we discussed, despite its high prevalence, few treatments and rehab protocols actually target sleep as a primary symptom. Clinicians often report that patients with dual diagnosis of PTSD and TBI have real difficulty with treatment compliance due to PTSD symptoms and executive function deficit, as we discussed. There are no evidence-based treatment protocols available that address multiple cognitive and sleep problems in veterans with TBI and PTSD. And clearly, there is currently a need for research and for researchers out there in the audience, the true need to identify best practices for treatment of patients with non-TBI and associated comorbidities such as PTSD and sleep disorder. I wanted to briefly mention, and if there is time, I will be happy to share more information with you in the QA section or after the presentation or in person by email, but I wanted to mention 2 promising treatments. Neuromodulation treatment. There is an emerging evidence that this technique, coming from basic neuroscience, they may target multiple symptoms and enable more successful treatment in patients with multi-BI and PTSD. specifically transcranial magnetic stimulation, which many of you probably heard earlier, which is FDA approved for treatment of depression, drug-resistant depression. So this TMS treatment specifically offers non-invasive way to stimulate specific brain areas. Non-invasive is the key word, just using magnetic fields. And it does have great potential to treat both neuropsychiatric and cognitive symptoms. As we looked, we saw evidence of therapeutic utility in PTSD, and as I mentioned, depression, and in improving cognitive symptoms in mild TBI in returning veterans. Those are all pilot trials, but encouraging evidence. And similarly, we have light-emitting diode therapy, LED therapy. This is a novel, relatively novel. It actually was around since the 60s, mostly for wound treatment, but relatively novel in this use. The LED therapy may have high, actually, therapeutic potential for neurorehabilitation in veterans with multiple symptoms, specifically sleep disturbance, PTSD and TBI, and we have case studies on humans and actually on veterans with mild and moderate TBI that showed positive treatment effect. What would be the ideal when we get to this, and hopefully very soon, because there are randomized controlled trials underway supported by the VA in research, rehabilitation, and development service of the VA that actually look at combined intervention, that combine neuromodulation treatment and different type of behavioral therapy. The one that I'm referring to actually is looking at the goal management training and educational training, but there is, from what we learned, a good potential of combination with specific sleep therapy in conjunction with neuromodulation. So from what we've gathered, combined interventions have great potential to enhance the efficacy of sleep treatment in this particular population. They reduce PTSD symptoms, they can promote recovery after TBI, and overall optimize outcome in returning veterans. Well, future directions, daunting task to follow up, but for clinical directions, evaluation and treatment of sleep problems should become an integral part of clinical management, and I believe, at least in the VA system, it already is and is included in the standard protocol of evaluating veterans. Using non-pharmacological interventions and neuromodulation techniques in the future can help to enhance the treatment and promote recovery. And in research, we just discussed that future research efforts should target the development of sleep-focused intervention and multimodal treatment programs that are adjustable to specific needs of veterans with multiple comorbidities. I should stop here, and as I mentioned, I have several slides in case we do have time in Q&A section to tell you about LEDs and TMS treatment case studies. But other than that, I'll turn mic to the researcher.
Great. Thank you so much. Actually, we do have quite a few pending questions. So we'll get right into those. If anybody joined us after the top of the hour and you need to know how to submit a question, you can do so just by using the GoToWebinar control panel on the right-hand side of your screen. Just click the plus sign next to the word question, submit your question or comment, and we'll get to it in the order that it is received. So the first question we have, what is the best timing for treatment of sleep, PTSD, or cognitive symptoms in veterans with PTSD, TBI, and sleep problems?
Oh, that's a great question, although complicated question. Well, based on our literature review and our own experience and everything we've collected talking to clinicians and providers, it is still one of the challenges in treatment planning, to determine the optimal timing for treatment of each of the multiple health issues is very difficult and should potentially be based on the individual evaluation. However, one of the arguments may be in favor of early treatment of cognitive dysfunction, given the TBI-related cognitive difficulties like attention, executive function, and learning. They may diminish treatment response to PTSD intervention, specifically cognitive behavioral treatment or exposure therapy. Alternatively, PTSD treatment may be a priority for veterans with more severe PTSD symptomatology, especially if we consider the problems with impulse control, emotional regulation, that may actually affect patients' ability to fully participate in cognitive treatment. There is also a possibility that PTSD interventions may help to improve sleep. But from what we see in the literature, in most cases, sleep problems remain at clinical levels, as I said earlier, even after successful PTSD treatment. And ultimately, I guess it is up to the clinician or clinician's team, if sleep problems interfere with recovery from PTSD and or mild TBI, then sleep should be the primary target of treatment, or potentially even precede intervention for other symptoms. There is one case study, I think, that found that preempting PTSD treatment with sleep-specific, sleep-focused intervention facilitated successful entry into other type of treatment, into the exposure-based therapy, I think, for PTSD. But as we discussed, I want to emphasize that we really need future clinical trials that may provide evidence base for this argument.
Thank you for that reply. The next question, does objective measure of sleep mean a sleep lab measurement?
Well, traditionally, yes. However, as I mentioned, of course, sleep lab is the gold standard. But for our specific population, for folks with PTSD and TBI, and I will emphasize PTSD, the sleep lab environment may be different. As a matter of fact, say, people in the healthy population, they say that they actually don't sleep well in the lab because it's so different from their home. But people with PTSD, especially veterans with recent traumatic experiences and recent deployment, they actually sleep better in the locked room where there are other people watching over. So in that way, I don't think that the gold standard would work well, and kind of in a way it undermines the ecological validity of the data. And as I mentioned, that was one of the reasons that we used actigraphy, not because it's like a poor researcher too. We don't have access to sleep lab, it's very expensive. But once again, speaking of ecological validity, just having a monitor on your wrist for 7 days, people even forget they have it on, they don't need to take it out, to take it off at all, because it's waterproof, it's shockproof, and we collect more data for longer periods of time, 7 to 10 days of sleep. And once again, given variability of sleep in the PTSD population and all other factors that we mentioned earlier, we believe that for veterans with PTSD and or TBI, actigraphic monitoring actually is a better choice and a less expensive choice for researchers and also for clinicians, because it is you can clean it and reuse, and you only need one software pack to analyze all the data. So definitely, actigraphy is a very valid tool for to use as an objective measure.
Thank you for that reply. Do you have, does the subject determine when to begin assessing sleep versus time in bed? Meaning if somebody reads in bed for 20 minutes before, quote, trying to sleep, wouldn't we want to measure from the point of beginning to try versus beginning to lie in bed?
Oh, this is an excellent question, actually, and right on for some of the troubleshooting for people who are to do it. So definitely, this is very important, and how it's done, say, at least in a research setting and at least in our studies, we have two parallel tools. We, in addition to actigraphy, we also use diary, but with our younger folks and forgetful folks, diary is not a very reliable instrument. However, we could at least retroactively see where they have to indicate what time they went to bed, did they read or not. But the good news that in actigraphy setup, in ActiWatch or the actigraphic monitor, there is a way to indicate when you actually want to go to sleep. So what we say to people, if you are going to bed and you read, or we discourage them from watching TV, but let's face it, that's very difficult to monitor, and you're still not asleep, but then you'll say, okay, I'm ready, and then press, there is a marker, and I press the button, and the marker in the software will pick it up. Another thing is that in actigraphy system, majority of actigraphs also have a light detector. So we also know, and we have all the data simultaneously collected on whether the lights were on and off. Well, having said that, I must point out that our, at least from the report, majority of our PTSD patients actually say that they need light or they need something on, like TV on, in order for them to sleep. So for us, it might not be a very reliable measure, but for other researchers or in clinical setting, that may give you more information of what was going on. But definitely, it is important to measure the time before they actually fell asleep. And software is pretty sensitive from what we observe in picking that up.
Thank you for that reply. I am going to put up another slide, but have no fear. We are going to continue on with Q&A. We do have, I'd say, a good half a dozen questions or so left.
If we go on, let me ask you, maybe pick what are the most relevant for people right now, and I will be available after, but I will have to. I have other scheduled prior engagements, and I will I maybe have 5 more minutes before I have to run.
Okay, excellent. You just let me know, and we'll stop there, and then we can get the rest of the Q&A answered and posted on the
archive. I will. Okay. But I will be available for email or in person or even more recording for later review if somebody is interested.
Great, thank you. Can you please address issues with identifying, diagnosing TBI? Is it through self-report, EMR, et cetera? Do you have recommendations or lessons learned?
You mean in the context of sleep disturbance or just...
We will have to ask that person to write in and clarify if this is about sleep disturbance. In the meantime, I do have another pending question. Do sleep disorders vary in injury modes, for instance, blast, impact, or acceleration disorders?
This is an excellent question, but actually excellent question for future research. We look high low, and I'm happy to offer our extensive review paper for people as a reference point. And last we looked, there were no answer to that. We that would be great to see, and we may predict that at some point we will be able to detect the differences, but for now there is no evidence to say either way.
Thank you. We can just go ahead and do one more question. Do you have educational materials for patients that may suggest making behavioral changes in order to improve their sleep?
Well, in our studies, actually, we do. We have three trials, and in one of those, we have educational treatment, and actually one of the modules is specifically dedicated for monitoring, kind of identifying, monitoring, and making changes in your sleep habits. So, yes, we have it. It is not published yet. It will be published with a study, and we are at the conclusion of the data collection, so it will be coming soon. However, for somebody who is interested, I am absolutely willing to share the materials we have and use, and maybe forward something that we've collected along the way.
Excellent. Okay, we do have the person that wrote in clarifying about the previous question. Do you have time for that one, or do you want to take it?
Since it is not specifically relevant to sleep, I will be happy to answer that and send materials by email or provide you answer after for the recording.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you so much for presenting, and I will pass along the remaining questions, and we'll get your responses, and we'll either post those in writing or audio with our archive. So don't worry if your question didn't get answered. We will get those materials to you. And thank you so much for presenting and lending your expertise to the field. Do you have any wrap-up comments you would like to make?
Well, I'd like to thank everybody who participated today. This is a very important topic, and for us at least, but I believe to the field. So I hope some of the information was useful to you. And if you have any questions or comments, please feel free to contact us. We'll be happy to communicate.
Thank you, Dr. Bogdanova. And Ralph, I want to thank you as well for helping set up this session and the rest of our TBI series. And, of course, thank you to all of our attendees for joining us today. As you can see, I am plugging the VA site called Pulse, so please have a look at your page and go ahead and sign up for that. And I am going to close out the session now, so please take just a moment to fill out the couple survey questions that are going to come up on your screen. We do look very closely at those, and it helps guide where our program heads. So thank you so much, everyone, and this does conclude today's HSR&D Cyber Seminar presentation.